This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. We begin today in Orange County because today is the day that federal judge David O. Carter wants to know where three homeless shelters are going to go. It's an issue we've been following closely, an issue that KQED's Michelle Wiley is going to tell us more about now.
During a meeting with city officials in May, Judge David Carter made it plain. He wanted sites, going so far as to spell it out for them, S-I-T-E-S. Locations in North, Central, and South Orange County where cities would agree to place a shelter. The pressure is mounting to find these places, especially as stopgap measures like temporary housing and local armories come to an end. Advocates say they're seeing familiar faces return to the streets, exactly what Judge Carter is trying to stop. Brooke Weitzman is an attorney with the Santa Ana-based Elder Law and Disability Rights Center. She's also one of the lawyers suing the county over its treatment of the homeless.
As all those things come to an end, as the armories come to an end, we're seeing that there's still no long-term plan. And the result of that is increasing numbers of unsheltered individuals. And so we are seeing encampments popping up around Santa Ana, around Anaheim, around Orange, and I'm sure in other areas that I haven't visited yet.
If city and county officials don't step up, Judge Carter says he is prepared to issue a temporary restraining order that could limit or halt the city's ability to enforce anti-camping ordinances and loitering laws. These are used to prevent homeless populations from camping on the street. Andrew Doe is the chairman of the Orange County Board of Supervisors.
I don't know of any specific sites being proposed by cities so far. I know there have been some that have been discussed, so I'm waiting to hear from the cities myself.
The armory shelters have a hard deadline to close on July 16th, just a little over a month to ensure hundreds of people have somewhere to go. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley.
A bipartisan plan to fix DACA has failed. The plan would have allowed DACA recipients, these are children brought to the United States as children, legally, to stay. Moderate Republicans in Congress, led by California's Jeff Denham, failed in their effort to force a vote. Instead, Republican leaders will move two more conservative immigration bills to a vote next week. It's unclear whether these bills will get the votes needed. In fact, House Speaker Paul Ryan said as much about an hour ago.
Look, I'm not going to ask any member to back a bill they haven't seen yet, but our members have been participating in negotiations to come up with a proposal. But we had to put legislation in front of people. That's what a final vote determines on. But we have a process that all of our members have agreed to, which brings these bills to the floor. And that means we don't do a discharge petition and we bring these bills to the floor. Members are going to reserve judgment on a final vote on a piece of legislation until and after they've read that legislation. I would expect that of any member.
Representative Jeff Denham had hoped to get a majority of members to sign that discharge petition you heard Speaker Ryan talking about that would have bypassed the party leadership. That plan did not work. You're going to hear why tomorrow from Denham himself on the California Report. We're going to move now to a study, Prop 47, the 2014 law that cut penalties for nonviolent crimes, has not led to a rise in violent crime, but some thefts have gone up. That's according to a new study from the Public Policy Institute of California. KQED's Suki Lewis has more.
There has been a small uptick in violent crime in the past few years, but the study found that jump wasn't caused by Prop 47, but by a difference in how crime stats are reported. The study also found that larceny thefts, like shoplifting, have gone up about 9%, but that recidivism rates are down, along with jail bookings. Savings from lower incarceration rates have been diverted toward mental health and substance abuse programs, but researchers say it's still too early to know if those programs are what's causing the dip in people returning to jail. For the California Report, I'm Suki Lewis.
California is setting aside $37 million to prevent the illegal sale of tobacco products to minors. The money will go to local governments to fund law enforcement, retailer training programs, and youth outreach. Attorney General Javier Becerra says the range of new products makes it easier to get hooked.
In fact, it goes beyond tobacco use. It goes now to these e-cigarettes, the vaping, the types of things that get our kids addicted to the nicotine that's in some of these products.
San Francisco and San Mateo counties recently banned the sale of flavored tobacco items. Let's talk now about a story of highway robbery, alleged highway robbery, I should say. It begins on a windy rural road in Sonoma County. That's where, in 2016, Adele Freeman was hauling legally grown marijuana when he was pulled over by a local police officer. KQED's Suki Lewis reported this story for us. She joins us now to pick the story up. And Suki, what happens to Hadel Freeman?
So he gets pulled over, and his first question is, like, why am I getting pulled over? And the officer who's at his window says, oh, you touched the white line. And then he says the officer smiled. And at that point, he got this feeling, you know, that something had gone really wrong.
But I'm going to stop you, Suki, just jump in. He did not have a transportation license, an actual license.
He did not have a license from the state.
And the officer cites this as a reason to essentially confiscate this marijuana, which is where this story is going. He had 47 pounds on him. He was selling it for about $1,500 a pound. For the folks who haven't been to Cloverdale and spent time there, this is a rural, kind of rugged area, lots of mountains, lots of windy roads. And I would imagine it's rather unsettling to speak with a police officer who's saying he's pulling you over for kind of touching the white line when everyone touches the white line.
But to me, like, the bigger picture, John, is that this isn't just about allegations of one corrupt cop. This is part of a larger pattern and about how this police officer, his partners, were actually enabled. No one was providing oversight for them. And in fact, these civil asset forfeiture laws, whereby police can take people's money, then enriches the department. So there's actually this big financial disincentive to kind of look into what he was doing and, you know, potentially check him and stop him from doing it. And he actually got this big award in 2015 from the mayor for doing this work. And he brought in more than $1 million to his local department.
This isn't one isolated instance. I know when I was up in Mendocino County, I heard several stories of what they call the Mendo shakedown, which is when police pull people over and take their marijuana.
Yes. You talk to anyone in the marijuana industry and you will hear these stories. I actually spoke to this defense attorney here in Sonoma County. He's also a civil rights attorney, and he says he's heard these stories from his clients for years, and not just about Roanoke Park Police. And here's what he had to say about it.
Within the cannabis industry, it is referred to as the cost of doing business. You may, in fact, lose some of your medicine. You may, in fact, lose some of your money. But why are you going to want to poke that hornet's nest if you got away without a sting?
It's interesting. This reporting is coming at a time when we know that there are great distribution bottlenecks, when we know there's a glut of marijuana on the market, which has really lowered the price per pound. We know that there's a lot of hassle people have to do to be legal. And now on top of it, they could do all of this right and still get it seized from the police, at least based on your reporting. Suki Lewis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, John.
Moving on, the state is putting more than $16 million towards arts funding. Here's KQED's Chloe Veltman.
The California Arts Council is disbursing more than 1,000 grants to organizations across the state. The funds will mostly support groups working with underserved communities, like the Sacramento creative writing nonprofit 916 Inc. Development Director Justin Self says his $45,000 grant will provide writing workshops for at-risk youth and kids in jails.
And so if we can take those kids that are most at risk of ending up in that situation and engage them in a program where they're able to express themselves with honesty and with authenticity, and they can process the trauma they've experienced.
California still ranks relatively low at 38th place for state funding for culture. But Governor Jerry Brown has proposed up to an additional $10 million arts dollars for next year. For the California Report, I'm Chloe Veltman.
Watsonville in Santa Cruz County is home to strawberries, Martinelli's sparkling apple cider, and my cousin Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. Now it's also home to a fifth grader who won a prestigious National Science Award. He won this over 100,000 other student competitors. KQED's Farida Jabalo-Romero reports.
Watsonville resident Mateo Torres is 10 and loves lizards. He noticed his friend was too embarrassed to wear his hearing aid to school. So for a class project, Mateo built a cool accessory that sits atop the ear, called the Hearing Buddy.
It's a rubber lizard that has wire in it so it can adjust to the right type of hearing aid or ear, and it attaches to the hearing aid to camouflage it.
Mateo's kit includes extra lizard figurines that other kids can wear in solidarity with friends who have a hearing impairment. Judges at this year's National Invention Convention and Entrepreneurship Expo in Michigan were impressed. They said Mateo created technology that, quote, makes our society more inclusive. Mateo's reaction?
Awesome.
His mom says the next step is to get his invention patented. Mateo hopes the Hearing Buddy inspires classmates at Hall District Elementary in Watsonville, where most students are English learners and many parents are farm workers. For the California Report, I'm Farida Javala Romero.
This November, voters will decide whether California should be three separate states. The Silicon Valley investor Tim Draper has been pushing the plan, and yesterday, that plan made the ballot. We'd be remiss not to mention that Draper is a billionaire, and like other billionaires, he founded a university. It's called the Draper University of Heroes. It's in San Mateo County. Draper may or may not fancy himself a hero in pushing for a three-state solution, if you will, but separating California is an old, old idea. In fact, let's not forget what we call California is actually the northern part of the old Spanish and Mexican state of California, which extends some 800 miles south of San Diego. It was cut up then because there was a power struggle in the Catholic Church. And as recently as 1965, the California State Senate voted to create two states because of concerns about water. Now, at this point, if you don't understand that this idea has been around, and so you know, it's been roundly rejected over 200 times, consider this. Even the California slacker indie band Pavement has called for two states. And based on the radio play of the song, it seems hardly anyone was listening to them either.